the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 17th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we are back.
We are back, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, we love doing these road trips because we always come back with so many stories.
Yeah.
A totally uneventful trip this time.
Yeah, you know, it was so boring.
Nothing at all happened that would invoke any laughter.
I can't wait to get into it. You know, and I was also a guest on the Poker War show this week because you were doing your civic duty, and I was just licking my chops, ready to just dive into the subject, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to save it all for our show. So I mentioned a few things on there, but I didn't really get into it at all because I thought, you know what? We need to have a full head of steam for this episode because it was quite remarkable, some of the things that happened. You know, you always think that one of these trips is going to go off without a hitch, and it just ultimately never happens. Something always has to happen.
And what fun would that be?
This is why we need to have a camera crew follow us around. Like, it would be on that, what's that show you want us to go on all the time?
Amazing Race.
Amazing Race, yeah, that's what we need. This was the amazing non-race, but we found a way. We found a way, and of course, we'll get to that later, but it was a good trip. Glad to be back, though.
Yeah, absolutely, and, you know, while we're all jetting around, there's a World Series going on, Chris.
You'd never know it by being in Atlantic City.
No, not at all. But well, we're already up to like what, event 12 or something by now.
It goes quick, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like event 20 or something already. It's ridiculous, and you know, it's hard to believe. You know, they always have like two a day or something. That's the thing, you know. And you get caught up in the one a day mentality, but really, it's like every time you turn around, I'm getting another report from Nolan Dalla saying, "Hey, we got another winner." It's like, oh my god, too many bracelets, man. They got to be valuable.
Yeah. Well, I still don't have one, so they're still valuable to me.
Yeah, you know, our good buddy, good friend, been on the show a million times, Phil Hellmuth. Oh, no, wait. He had a chance, very good chance, to finally win a non-Hold'em bracelet this week, Deuce to Seven event. And he had a huge chip lead, too. I think it was like 3-1 when he was heads up with John Juanda. Right, and John Juanda came through, and Hellmuth is still just a Hold'em bracelet winner. Interesting. That was like the single draw, no limit. So,
yeah, it's probably a little facetious to say just a Hold'em bracelet winner because he has like 40 of them.
40 right? of them, yeah, yeah,
a little less than 40, but it's still impressive nonetheless. His career. But you know it's got to be eating at him.
Oh man!
People keep telling him he's a hold'em only specialist, and he gets this close, and he just can't close the deal. I think he's if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's finished second before in a deuce to seven, I believe.
I think that's true, and
made another final table or something. So that's his backup event, I guess.
Yeah, he's done well in every event. You know, it's just for some reason you just can't close it out when it's not hold'em. I don't know what the deal is, and. You know, Juanda, that's his fifth bracelet, too, so he's starting to join some real elite company now. Pretty amazing stuff.
And a very interesting game to be aggressive in heads up. I mean, it's a tough game heads up, I would think. I mean, it's a tough game anyhow.
Yeah.
But, I mean, heads up, I mean, it's talk about it's a game of chicken, but it's that chicken that's on Family Guy, man.
Pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, is if I remember correctly, I think Hellmuth stood pat on the final hand with a queen and went all in, and Juanda called and drew and hit a jack or something to beat him. And then that's the thing is, I'm pretty sure from the home game, like Faso does that a lot. He'll stay pat with a queen,
yeah.
You know, because it's tough to hit. You know, they make a hand if you're drawing better than a jack. So, you know, it's a sound play, I guess. But man, I'd hate to have to go out with a queen. You know.
That's tough.
And that's the other thing, too, I had not written about, but we had talked about on the show, you know. I'm telling you, if somebody comes up with a shorthanded book, it's going to sell like hotcakes, you know. I mean, how do you play Deuce of Seven shorthanded, you know?
Well, I think that's just it. I don't think there's a book to be written out there. I mean, it's really just, you know, who wants to take control of it? I mean, really, what's the strategy involved? I mean, I'm not saying there's no strategy. There is some strategy, but, yeah, really, you got to know your player. I mean, if your player is just going to be moving all in all the time, that's different. If you, I don't know how tricky you can get in a no limit deuce to seven heads up match.
Oh, that's it's something I'd like to experience, though. I'll tell you that. I never get to that far in the tournament, so I like to know. But that's pretty well.
You know what I mean, though. I mean, there's just no information.
Yeah, no, I know.
At all in this game. I mean, yeah. You got more people in the hand, then you're picking up more information, but it's heads up. I mean, heads up, hold 'em. You've got cards on the table. You've got different betting rounds. So, I mean, you can – and even that's kind of like, you know, squishing around and stuff. But this, I mean, somebody goes all in.
Yeah.
You know, is he snowing? Does he have a king? Does he have a, you know, a perfect seven? You never know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess it'd be more help, too, if it was triple draw, because then you can – there's more absolutely. To it. But one draw, it's one and done. You know, you got to really make a decision and know your player. So it – didn't work out for Hellmuth, though. He knew Juwanda and still lost. So, it's tough, man. It's tough. I feel bad for him. You know, I mean, I wish he'd get one so just we could stop talking about it and move on, you know? You know, that would have been an even dozen bracelets, too. Would have really, he would have been, as in football terms, he would have been pulling away from the competition, too, because he'd have a full extra bracelet between him and Chan and Brunson, so... But, you know, he's still, the World Series is still early. He's still got another 20 events or so, 25 events.
More than that, right?
We've already got results for at least 20 now. So, and then by the time the show airs at the end of the week, it'll be, don't forget, we're taping real early this week.
Yeah, that's true, but we still got like 25, 30. Right?
Whatever, Scott, just move on. Move on, buddy.
All right, well, you know, somebody else that lost this week was Reuters.
The news agency.
Famous news agency. They do quality work day in and day out, I'm sure. But this week, we have these little poker searches programmed on our computer where we pick up little tidbits of the poker world out there, right? We miss a lot of it. We pick up enough that we can feed the show.
Yeah.
And feed a magazine.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, it picks up some stuff that just isn't related, really. Generally, it's some... crackpot sports writer using a poker analogy in some kind of football story. But this time it was a business writer, Chris, and I started to read the lead and I gave him credit. I'm like, wow, this is somebody that knows how to play poker, and I'm going to be impressed. And then, boom! Second graph, no. Lose all respect. So let me read it here and then we can check a little bit. It says, in poker, this is the lead, right?
Yeah.
In poker, slow playing a strong hand with small early bets can eventually lead to a big payoff. But the strategy can also backfire by giving other players the time to draw superior cards and win the game. See, I got chills right now. It's a business story, right?
Pretty decent.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know, that's not just, random flop stuff that you hear on TV. That's somebody knows what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
All right, here's the second grab. International paper company should not fall into the, quote, slow poker trap as it looks to launch a $3.3 billion hostile takeover bid for small rival Temple Inland Incorporated bankers and analysts.
They have nothing to do with each other. What the hell is that?
Well, what the heck is the slow poker trap?
Oh, man. So, well, what is he saying? That they should announce their presence right away so that they can give Temple Inland a chance to, you know, build up some stock and not let them take him over? I mean, I don't. What the hell is that?
I mean, I think the slow playing lead is what they're trying to get at. Now, why they decided to go, hey, we just showed everybody we know exactly how to play poker in the lead. Let's show them that we can know nothing about poker in the second graph. They're just trying to get creative there with this slow poker trap. Should not slow play rival Temple Inland as they appear to launch, you know. why do his writers feel the need to twist the words every graph so we can't repeat ourselves?
You can tell that the editor got a hold of this and screwed it up or something.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm really hoping that's what happened, is that an editor said, you know what, hey, you're using the same wordplay in the lead in the second graph, and, you know, that's what my J-school teacher told me we can't do, so I'm going to change it, even though I have no idea what poker's like, and I'm not going to call the reporter, I'm just going to let it go, because I'm a copy editor, I know better.
It seems
that
like...
stuff happens every day.
Yeah, there was either no editor at all, or there was only one editor. There should have been two editors. What's that? So that one guy should have seen it, another guy should have looked at it and been like, all right, we got to fix this. But I can't believe, why would you go, that's such a long way to go. It's such a waste of words. You know, you would think that you should choose your words wisely when you're writing stories and just make them, especially when it's a wire feed. We don't need flowery leads. We just need, get to the news, man.
Yeah, yeah, all right. But, you know, I don't mind in a writer. I mean, it's a bold roll of the dice to make the lead completely about poker and not about business at all.
Yeah.
So I give him some style points there. And he immediately got right into it next. I mean, even if you're like, oh, what the heck is this guy talking? Oh, okay, I get it now. Hostile takeover. It'll work, but... Yeah. You know, you ruined the whole lead now by the slow poker. Might as well just start off without that whole thing, which is probably what you're saying anyhow. Probably what most people are saying.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But I mean, at least you can tell this guy knows how to play poker, but big deal. He has not a right, though. That's why, oh, man. Maybe that's why he's so good at poker, because he doesn't get paid enough to write this crap. Jeez. Well, we got a mailbag from Jody Gay. Wants to vacation in the Caribbean in late December and play some live poker. And wants to know where I could play. So I like this because you can answer it. Because I couldn't.
Yeah, I've never been to the Caribbean, so I have no idea. So I'm just going to guess here. No, I actually have been down there a couple times. And I will say overall, don't get your hopes up. I think I probably said on the show before, too. You'll find lots of poker rooms. In fact, actually, I think I counted more than 40 or 50 in the Caribbean. Most of them, though, will be one or two tables. Probably not going at all, or if they are, once or twice a night, and probably with not properly trained dealers, and probably with some other nuttiness like weird rakes or things like that. So it's probably going to be an exercise in futility for the most part. You're going to the Caribbean, man. Just have fun. Don't feel a need to, like, you know, be a rounder down there, too. But I did do a little research, and, of course, some things that I've known myself, so... Let me give you a quick overlay of the Caribbean here. The Dominican Republic has the most rooms, according to my Casino City Gaming Business Directory. Great resource. They got 20. The largest, of course, is at Hard Rock Punta Cana, which I think we talked about in the show before, too. Yeah. We're looking to do an event down there. It's a gorgeous casino poker room. They have 8 tables. They get games going every night, but really only 2, but they're pretty wild and crazy games on the show. So yeah. Oh, definitely check that one out. Puerto Rico has about 15, but they're all pretty small, and Puerto Rico is way too expensive to go to anyhow. You're going to find much cheaper vacation somewhere else.
Wow.
Curacao, which I guess is the Netherlands and Antilles are calling themselves now. I know it as Curacao when I first went there.
Okay.
They have about 13, and most of them are pretty decent size, so I think between that and Aruba, which has 5, which are all probably between 5 and 10 tables, you might want to check those 2 islands out. They're right off of the coast of South America. That's probably your best shot of hitting a room or being able to at least move around to another room if you don't like the room that you're at.
Yeah.
And then there's about 8 or 10 other ones scattered throughout the different islands, all of them probably pretty small and just convenience. But, you know, if you're looking for a vacation, unless the wife or the husband or whoever you're traveling with is fixated on the Caribbean, if you really want to play poker, you know, don't forget the mainland, Central America there. Costa Rica is just teeming with poker.
Yeah.
Lots of great rooms there, big rooms, lots of good play there. That's a good place. And some of the other nations around there have a lot of good rooms as well, too. So that's probably what I would suggest. Go to Costa Rica first, Central America. If you insist on the Caribbean and you really want to play, probably Curacao, Aruba. And if not, at least make sure you're picking out a room, a hotel that has a big room, so you probably have a shot of getting a game going.
But you know what? If he's not insisting on the Caribbean, then he could just come on our cruise and play poker and go all the way down to Mexico.
That's very true.
That's December?
It's right December where you got the Antia Poker Cruise. We are going to, we'll be in the Caribbean the entire week. Mexico, Jamaica, Grand Cayman, you're not going to play poker in the port there, but you got 85 hours of poker.
There you go. There you go. That's a sunny vacation if I've ever seen one.
Absolutely, Jody. That's what I would suggest.
It's not the Caribbean, you know. It's not all Caribbean. I mean, but you know, hey, still what?
I guarantee you, you're going to be on more of the Caribbean during that cruise than you are going to one of these islands for a week. All right, Jody. Well, you know, we love for you to come on the cruise at andyupmagazine.com/cruise. And remember, we have a Bahamas one coming up here in the end of August. That's a little cheaper. Not going to the Caribbean, but Atlantic.
Yeah.
You know, somebody asked about that. Hey, I want to go to the Atlantic Ocean. Where should I play? We'll just go ahead and answer that now, andyupmagazine.com/cruise. But just in case you decide to diss us and go to an island, Jody, we still are going to send you some swag. And we'll be happy to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. And as far as I know, that program does work in the Caribbean.
You know, we were long distance this week, so we couldn't really get to the hotline. And it turns out no one called it anyway. 813-448-1120. We don't have a call this week, Scott. What are we going to do?
That's not entirely true. We did get a call. it was a wrong number.
I heard that one. That was pretty funny. The guy was looking for like some Pinellas County taste of Pinellas or something, right?
Well,
was that?
What I feel bad is the guy's like, "Hey, I'm returning a call. Call me back." I'm not gonna call him back. I didn't call him. So now this guy's sitting at home, like, you know, the nerdy guy on prom night, waiting for somebody to call for a date, and the phone's not gonna ring.
Oh my god. Sorry, buddy. You're not going to get your free coupons to the Taste of Pinellas.
And had he said, and just in case this is any up, we would have sent him a t-shirt for PMS Pokerware. You know, they got hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the AnnieUp store at AnnieUpStore.com. But no, he didn't say that, and no one else wanted the shirt this week, so I would say that I'm going to wear it. But that's not how we do things here. I don't want to get some one-time listener all worked up.
I'm sure there's some t-shirt we could come up with for PMS Poker where that involves making a bad call, you know, because he called the wrong number. Get it?
Okay. Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, and we'll get send it out to him, but the guy has no idea he called us, so forget it.
No chance. All right, but we do have a call to Floor this week. The floor was called, Chris.
The floor was called, just not the hotline.
And Jeff D. is the one that called the floor, and here's what he had to say, Chris. Three players are in a pot. Player one and player two seem kind of friendly, but definitely don't know each other. Player three is kind of new to the table, but has been there enough to not be considered new. The hand makes it to the river. Player one is first to act and makes a scary but not over-the-top bet. Player two thinks about it and is about to put money in the pot when player one says, quote, "You don't want to call." Player two pulls his money back and never went over the line, thinks for 5 seconds or so and says he hopes player one shows at the end, then folds. Player three thinks for about a minute and folds. Player one shows a bluff. Player three complains that since there were three people in the pot, it was improper for player one to say anything and that it was angle shooting. The dealer never said anything to player one, nor was the floor called over. So, is this improper? If it is and the floor was called over, what would have happened? And by the way, player one said to player three, quote, "You're right, it won't happen again."
Well, I'm just going to read what Jody said, and then we can talk about it. He says, "Good job, player one. You won the pot. The complaint here is, hey, he lied to me in a poker game." Telling lies in a poker game is allowed. It's what we do with our betting, our demeanor and actions, and yes, with our words. I don't consider player one's action angle shooting, but do think players two and three should be addressed. The fact is, players two and three were trying to collude, which is cheating and is totally against the rules. Player one simply made a statement that would have been ignored had the other two players been inclined to play the game in a more honest fashion. The action could be considered bad etiquette, but player one didn't say anything that disclosed the contents of his hand. The other side of this argument is that poker is a social game for most people and considered entertainment at lower limits. Doing whatever it takes to win a pot should be something you say for players who are serious as you or as serious as you about the game. It wasn't clarified if this was a tournament or cash game, and the size of the game wasn't mentioned in this scenario. Tournament directors and floor people are tasked with doing what is best for the game, best for the players, and best for the room. I would be inclined to give a warning followed by a penalty for a second incident in a tournament that is smaller than $200, which are more socially focused tournaments. Same thing for a cash game smaller than 2-5, no limit. What do you think, Scott?
You know, I don't know whether this is the ruling that I was expecting.
Yeah, me neither.
To be honest, I don't know what the ruling was. I mean, I get the point. Player one is, you know, trying to do some action or or, you know, the whole you don't want to call usually means, yes, I do want to call. So, I mean, he's doing reverse psychology. Reverse psychology here? Is that right?
I guess.
No. He's spinning around like a dog, I guess. Somebody's reversing. So, you know, I don't know. Some rooms I've been in, you can't talk at all. I mean, that was the case at the circuit event you were in, right?
Yeah. And what I'm confused about here is he's thinking players 2 and 3 are colluding. I don't understand how that could be possible. Player 2 was about to make a call, didn't. Player 3 folded and complained. If player 3 is complaining, why is he colluding? And he doesn't even know player 2. Player 1 and 2 are the ones that were friendly, so.
Yeah, maybe you get a little confused. Maybe it should be players 1 and 2.
Maybe players 1 and 2.
Yeah, because obviously player 3 is just, you know, playing his hand and folding and then complaining afterwards.
But, you know, if player 1 doesn't want player 2 to call and has a bluff, then they can't be colluding either. Because if they're colluding and they're trying to help each other, it wouldn't make sense either. So I'm not really sure what he means by that. But I don't like one player talking about their hand with two other people in there. I thought you weren't allowed to talk at all. So when you have two people in a hand, when it's heads up, that's one thing. But when there's more than two other people in the hand is what I should have said. So, I don't know. When there's three people in a hand, you're not supposed to talk.
Well, I always like to look for takeaways in this because we can argue the finer points for years, and I'm sure we will on the forum, as we always do. But the takeaway here is just shut up when you're in a hand.
Yeah.
You know, if player one didn't say anything, this wouldn't be, Jeff wouldn't be sending this in, Jody wouldn't be answering, and we wouldn't be talking about it on the show. Not that there's not value in any of that, but, you know, just shut up.
Well, the guy didn't want to call, though. Yeah, he was desperate. He did not want to call.
Well, and it worked out for him, too, but then it caused a little problem here, and then, of course, he apologized afterwards, so, which, you know, is great, because now he got exactly what he wanted. He won the pot and then said, oh, hey, I'm sorry. My bad man. But really, I mean, I guess that you know, we're trying to encourage our players to be gentlemen and gentle ladies at the table, right?
Yeah.
So what I would suggest is, you know, if you can't beat them the proper way, you know, don't try to beat them some other way. It's not angle shooting, I think, to say you don't want to call, but it's just improper.
Yeah.
You better just shut up.
Very good. Good way to wrap it up. Shut up.
All right, well, our feedback this week, we actually got it a couple weeks ago. We just now got it on the show. But, you know, we had that, that great Black Friday show, right?
Yes.
And we were a little confused about whether player funds were commingled with operating funds at some of these poker rooms. And we've got a couple emails from folks. Our good friend Bet Guru was the first one, but we've had other people send us that too, to let us know that it's really a jurisdictional thing. I never thought I'd be able to get jurisdictional on this show. Essentially, the government or that oversees PokerStars requires that PokerStars keep their player funds separate from their operating funds.
Right.
And the jurisdictions that oversee most of the other online sites, including Full Tilt, do not. Now, that doesn't mean that the companies can't on their own separate the two, which I think is still a huge issue in my mind.
Right.
But it certainly explains why Full Tilt is going at a snail's pace and trying to get money back because they may not even have it. And those of us who played on PokerStars have already blown our cash out money on the pink chip game at Harrah's Atlantic City.
And then some. Oh, man. But, yeah, it does make sense. And I'm sure – well, I'm not sure, but I'm thinking, too, that maybe Full Tilt or these types of rooms are trying to build up enough cash reserves so that they can say, okay, flip the switch and start paying people because they want to make sure they have enough to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what they're leaving us to believe because they're not saying anything otherwise. That may not be true, but if it's not true, then they should come out and say, hey, we've got the money. The money's not the problem, folks. It's the government. And then we can not believe that for a while if we want. But I really do. I find it concerning that they're commingling funds. And, you know, there's probably people out there to say, hey, you know, if that's the law, then let them do what they want. And, okay, that's cool. But, you know, I kind of like my companies to be a little more responsible than that.
Yeah. I mean, if they – forget it. I didn't want to go – forget it. But, you know, I wanted to have a quick aside about this. I'm glad you brought up BitGuru because we almost had yet another embarrassing moment to talk about in the show today. when I got knocked out of our little mini tournament and you were over at the other game playing with some of the other players who had already been knocked out, I walked up and I was convinced that the guy in the three seat was Bit Guru from, you know, from the side and behind. It looked just like him. And I almost walked up to the guy and said, "Hey, Bit Guru, you made the trip, buddy." You know, I almost did it with my arms, you know, around his shoulder. And it wasn't him. Oh, thank God I didn't do that. He was kind of cool, too. And kind of reminded me of him, too, just by even the way he talked and stuff. I think it was his brother from another mother, man. I don't know. It looked just like Bit Guru, because he came on one of our cruises and got to know him a lot. And I really thought that was him. So I was lucky that I didn't do anything, but, oh, that would have been so embarrassing.
All right, well, you mentioned the meetup, and we'll have a lot more to talk about in our main topic, but I want to remind everybody that our next one is in Las Vegas, 8 p.m. on Friday, July 1st at the Palms Casino, a little $70 mini tournament to get us started, followed by cash games. And we have some people ask, what do you mean by a mini tournament? Are we playing on T-sets? No, it just means that we've only held a couple tables back because we don't know how many of you all are going to show up. So
right.
It could turn into a maxi tournament.
Yeah, who knows? And you know, you brought up the cruises. So just again, August 29th, September 2nd, just $369. But you got to book like immediately. Like as soon as you hear this, you got to call up Scott because otherwise you're not getting this price. You've missed a guarantee of deadline, but you never know. You might get there anyway. And give us a call, see what we can do. And again, Scott. Scott said a million times, anyupmagazine.com/cruise for all the details. And one last thing, of course, we have our AnyUp store, anyupstore.com for all of our AnyUp logoed items, plus other great poker products. And, you know, we're hawking here. We need you to buy some stuff. We'd appreciate it.
I've been placing a couple orders for polo shirts here recently, so they apparently are more popular than the retro slash trucker hat.
Okay, let's see what papers are piling up on the news desk this week.
Federated Sports and Gaming, the company formed by Jeffrey Pollock and Annie Duke to create a pros-only tournament series, has bought Heartland Poker Tour, a televised tour that caters to everyday players. No word on what this means for either company.
Well, since they have no word, then I don't think I do either. They don't know what to say. How can I know?
We can guess a little here, and the guess here is obviously the big knock on Federated has been that they've been touting this nationally televised tournament series, but they've had no TV partner whatsoever.
Right.
Guess what? You buy Heartland Poker Tour, you've got 100 million households in your back pocket now. What it means for Heartland, I don't know. I was looking for some people that kind of like would have some time. This just broke yesterday. We didn't have time to follow up on ourselves. But I was starting to hope that somebody else kind of did. And I saw a Las Vegas Review-Journal story this morning, clicked on it. It was just a press release.
Of course.
Somebody just phoned it in yesterday, Chris.
Somebody didn't do their poker lead journalism that is so successful over at Reuters. Yeah, but you know the other thing too is you wonder why do they have to buy the tour? Why didn't they just hire the tour to film it for them? So that's another thing. You know, they want to have at their disposal, I guess. But yeah. All right, the Anne Arundel County Police Department. Thanks for giving me the tough one this week, Scott.
I always do.
We'll get to keep $470,000 in seized funds from online poker sites as part of the Black Monday investigation. The Odenton Patch reports.
Yeah, I know our ambassador up in the Mid-Atlantic region, Michael Young, also let us know about this, too. And there's some people up there. We got a couple other emails, too. People are spitting mad over this, Chris.
They should be.
Police department gets to keep, you know, nearly $500,000. And but, you know, I guess the reminder is, as, you know, Larry Walters talked to us about two months ago on our show, you know, government's business.
Yeah.
Yep. Going after the money, you know, this police department probably doesn't have a lot of resources. They helped a lot. You know, hey, to the winner goes the spoils. It's not my money.
Nice.
Well, but, you know, there's nothing to say that any player money is part of this, that it's, you know, the site's money, of course, now, as we know that, you know, some of these sites commingle it. And so I guess you could say it is player money in a way, but that's not your fault.
Yeah.
That's not the police department's fault. That's the online site's fault. So
yeah.
Let's put blame where blame is. So.
Yeah, very good.
All right, and finally, talk about getting pissed off over a prop bet, Chris. A Pennsylvania man was convicted last week of battery for beating up a fellow poker player after a home game, the Morning Call reports. But the fight wasn't over cards. Oh, no, Chris. One of the players said he had a bottle of urine in his vehicle that another player could use to cheat with on a drug test. That player bet him $300 that he was full of... I can't say it. After the game, the bettor demanded to see the bottle. The other player said the bet was absurd and was promptly pounded on by his opponent in the bet.
Where's the bet on the human body? I'm trying to... He's pounded his opponent in the bet.
By his opponent. By the bettor.
I know.
This is hard to write, man. I spent an hour last night on this.
Oh, my God. You know what, though? $300, that's a huge bet. Just the... You don't got no bottle out there. I bet you $300. That's a random number. Where do you come with $300 that you don't have a bottle of piss in your car?
But I'll tell you this. If they're betting $300 on urine, that's a home game I want to be in.
Yeah, that's a big, big home game.
Of course, I'm getting a bodyguard, because I don't want to get beat up. But they're obviously playing with lots of cash. You got people with drug problems. And I'm just going to guess that they're not the sharpest... sharps in the casino.
Oh, man. I love that, too. It's like the conversation. You could just see the conversation go. You know, oh, man, I'm worried, man. Why, what's the matter? Oh, Monday, I got to go into work. I'm applying for this job for work, and I got to take a drug test. And, you know, I smoked some weed last week. And I'm like, hey, man, I got some piss in the car. I was driving long distance to get here, and I didn't want to stop off, you know, because Cosenza was driving. He never stops at the rest stops. So I had a bottle and, you know, let it go. And you don't got no, you know, I mean, you just imagine how that conversation, why these guys are drunk. And oh, man. And that's right, yeah. When the driver needs to stop, the driver stops. Otherwise, the truck keeps a rolling.
Well, what I want to know is before, you know, this guy's going to get beat up one way or the other is what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah.
You know, even if he paid him the bet, gave him the urine, you know, he's going to get beat up the next day when that guy just walks in the drug test with this big bottle, jar, and the nurse is like, what's that? You know, what's what? And then he's going to beat him up. Hey, you didn't tell me they were going to, like, you know, notice that I have it. There was going to be blood spilled either way in this, so I guess it all worked out better this way.
Fortunately, I'm bigger than you, so when we have this problem, you can't beat me up.
Hey, I can slew a stone.
Want to learn how to really make money at the World Series? Join Pro Poker Seminars with special guest Dr. Alan Schoonmaker in Vegas, June 27th through 29th. Small group intensive seminars on live sit-and-goes, cash games, and multi-table tournaments. Visit ProPokerSeminars.com and use bonus code ERIC50, that's ERIC50, to get $50 off the cash game or multi-table seminars.
Well, we got on the road again. It was good to get on the road again, Chris. We haven't been on the road
was.
In a while.
We took
the winter off because, you know, we're Floridians now, and we're limited where we can go in the winter without, you know, dying.
That is true.
This time we went to Atlantic City, Boardwalk Empire.
Yes.
And while it's no doubt taken a big hit from the new Pennsylvania and Delaware casinos, rumors of its demise are greatly exaggerated, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
There are some interesting things afoot there, and most of the managers are very aggressively trying some new things. So it's definitely worth a trip. Just be sure you don't miss your flight home.
I gotta tell you, I saw a new side of Scott on this trip that has been creeping in the past 3 years, and it was full-blown, and the trip didn't even start yet. He already lost it. So we get to the airport, and I'm like, hey, do you need me to stand in line with you? Because Scott had to check a bag, because we were flying Spirit Air, and you can only bring on one bag that's small, it fits under your seat, and if you want to put one over the overhead bin or check it, you know, you have to pay, I mean, otherwise you can check your bag. So I was like, do I have to stand in line with you because you got the bag and you're checking it? And he's like, no, I printed out your boarding pass, you're good. So I was like, all right, I'm going to sit over there and send some emails or whatever. So I'm like all the way across the terminal and I'm doing something. And I look up and I see the lady that's kind of stalking me behind the counter and she's kind of like waving at me. And I'm like, so then I look down and I look back up and she's like waving at me again. And I'm like, all right. Now, meanwhile, I see Scott's head like bobbing back and forth violently. And I'm like, what the hell? Is he choking? Do I gotta go over there and, you know, do, you know, the Heimlich? What the hell? So I go over there, and I'm like about 15 feet away. I can already hear Scott yelling. Wait, doesn't have a check bag? Why you gotta call him over? He doesn't have to do this. And you, why are you wasting our time? And you mean you threw that out for no reason? And I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I get up there, and Scott's yelling. And I'm, what happened? This lady insists on wasting time, or something like that. It was, this lady insists on just doing stuff for nothing, or something. It was some comment that I was like, oh my god, I can't believe he actually said it in front of the lady, you know, because she's sitting right there, and you're like basically calling her a loser to her face. What happened? And so how are you taking it from there?
Well, you know, I printed out your boarding passes. I checked a bag, prepaid a bag, so I had to go up there and drop my bag off. I gave her our boarding passes just so she can look up the information, and she threw them away. And I'm like, why did you throw them away? I'm going to reprint them. All right, that's cool. I don't know why, but that's fine. So you're going to reprint Chris's, too. Where is Chris? I'm like, well, he's way over there. Well, he needs to come up here and show me his ID. Why? He already has a boarding pass. He's going to show his ID 4 more times before he gets there. Because you checked a bag.
Yeah.
I checked a bag. He didn't check a bag. So it all got resolved, and you were hilarious because you're like, dude, let it go. Because I did not let it go the entire trip until, like, well, the last day. And the bottom line is I don't like people to waste time. All I wanted was an answer. Why? Maybe there was a reason why. But you couldn't give it to me. The reason it wasn't that I checked the bag. That doesn't make any sense.
But we got on the plane nonetheless. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Well, you know, as we're preparing to land in AC, you know, the pilot comes on, you know, thanks for flying. Hope to see you back again sometime soon. You know, all that crap, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, it's a beautiful day in Atlantic City. And everybody perks up and's happy. You know, then he follows up by a bunch of that flyboy nonsense about knots and, you know, wind speed and stuff that no one ever uses but pilots. And then he follows it up with, it's 103 degrees. How is 103 degrees ever beautiful, Chris?
And that's when I shoot you a glare because you're like, hey, I think we're going out to dinner with these guys. You better pack some pants. And, of course, all I packed were pants, no shorts. And I'm like, great, I got long sleeve shirts and long pants for this trip. Thank you, Scott. 103. And it's not like it's Vegas 103. It's Atlantic City 103. That's hot.
Well, the funny thing, we were talking, you were like, man, it never gets 100 in Florida, which is true. It never hits 100 down here.
Right.
I mean, we got 400% humidity, so it feels like it's 500 down here. But it never hits actually 100 down here.
Right. Just crazy, man. Absolutely crazy. And we got into the cab. It said 103 on the cab thing. But eventually, by the time we actually got to the Borgata or O'Hara's or wherever we were going, it was 90 degrees on this thing. But really, 103 degrees on the tarmac. That's just crazy.
Well, we got off the plane. We got that little blast of the hot air, you know, at the old jetway.
Yeah.
Then we tried to get out to baggage claim, and I thought I was like on some J.J. Abrams show, movie or something, man. What the heck is that the Atlantic City Airport has?
It's hilarious. It's got these huge tubes. It's almost like we're, you know, like inner office mail when you got the tubes and you throw
that's
the...
Good, yeah, I like that analogy.
It's like we're, except they're going to transport us outside. I thought it was going to suck us up and transport us outside. It's these huge plexiglass tubes that have, you know, the door opens up, you walk in, and it closes around you, and you stay inside this compartment. And while you're in there, the lady's like, the door's closed automatically. The door's closed automatically. The door, and it kept saying it over and over again. I'm like, what the hell? And then when it finally opens and you walk out on the other side, it says, welcome to Atlantic City. There was no reason for it. What, it didn't do anything. It didn't, like, blow air up your skirt or nothing. I mean, it just, you just stood in it for a second and then walked out. I didn't understand the purpose.
I disagree with you. It did serve a purpose. It served a purpose to confuse the heck out of everyone in line. We're all trucking along, normal speed. Yay, we're at Lake City, getting ready to lose money. Woohoo! And then all of a sudden, mass chaos. It's like we're in Haiti or something. People are all bending around looking, hey, what's the holdup? It's because everybody's like, "What? How do you work these tubes? I just want to get over the bags."
I can only surmise that the, you know, convention bureau, whatever you want to call it there, just wants to make sure that every single person is greeted with, welcome to Atlantic City, and they know they hear it, because if they're stopped in that tube and then they come out, then they're going to hear that lady say it. And it's to me, I mean, I really thought, I'm like, you don't have to search us. We came off the plane. We want to get away. We're not trying to get on the plane and create an international incident. You know what I mean? Well, I don't get it.
We're just trying to get out.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was really bizarre. I've never seen anything like that before, ever.
Oh, man. But we did succeed, and fortunately my bag was there. We thought the flight attendant that I had choice words with would have sent it to Hawaii or something. But no, we got there. You know, and beforehand, I always like to rent a car, usually, when I do these trips. But we decided, for a reason, it just didn't make sense. So trying to figure out how to get from the airport down to Harrah's, where we were staying. And I did massive research. And it wasn't easy, but I figured we could take a shuttle to a train station, take a train station, a bus from the train station, and get there, and it would cost us a total of $5, which I knew you would love.
Yeah.
When we get there, no evidence of that whatsoever. So a woman tells us to take a cab, so we're already down $32 for the trip, right?
Yep.
You know, getting around town is kind of interesting there. They got this thing called the Jitney, which has been in service since 19, I don't know what the bus says, 20?
Something like that, yeah.
But it runs 24/7, 365, which is really cool. And it's only $225 each, so that's probably a good way to get around town when you get down to town. But yeah, to get down to town. And, you know, if you're on the boardwalk, then you can just walk. Of course, I wouldn't suggest that when it's 103 degrees out. But but the Caesars properties also have a shuttle, and, you know, all you have to do is show them your little total rewards card. Though you're supposed to, like, prove something more. You're supposed to prove that you're actually staying there. You can't just use the total rewards card. And we got a little stressed at one point, but nope, they just swiped the card and we got on. And but it wouldn't matter because we had a little friend that was going to get you on.
Yeah, you know, why was I the socialite this trip? I don't understand. Usually, you're the one that does all the talking, and I'm sitting there like, you know, my head buried in my iPod or something, or my phone, or this time we're standing in line, and it was at the showboat on the way back to get the shuttle, and this Greek guy walks up to us and. Starts making conversation, but what happened was there was a big poster right by the exit, and it said, you must have your ID, you must have your card, or you must have your gold rewards card, and then a room key, if you were a gold member, wasn't enough. You need to have the piece of paper, which, you know, and the piece of paper literally was like 1 inch by 3 inches wide, and it was like tucked away in the little folder thing they give you when they give you your room keys, and I left that in the room. So I turned to you, and I said, Scott, you know, they want more than just the total rewards in your license and the room key. And you look up at the banner and you're like, well, they didn't ask for it on the way over, so maybe we'll get lucky. And that's when this Greek guy's like, that's okay, I'll take one of you with me. I'm like, what? And then he goes on for like an hour about all kinds of stuff, including don't put your $100 bills in your wallet. You want to know why? Because this is why. And then he bumps into me trying to do the old, you know, take your wallet when you bump into your trick, but he didn't take my wallet. I think he just wanted to feel my flesh against his. I have no idea. It was pretty spooky. But he starts making all these conversations with us, and I'm like, Scott, help me here. And nope, you keep your head buried in your BlackBerry. He didn't say one word to the guy. And I'm sitting there stuck talking to this guy for 30 minutes. Oh, but finally we got on board. And thank God that there was going to be a shuttle change for their shift or whatever. And that guy didn't get on the shuttle with us. Otherwise, he would have probably talked my ear off all the way over. And I would have...
Well, he would have came to the meetup, which would have been awesome.
Oh, man. But, yeah, I really resent being the socialite this week. I don't know what the deal is, but you can count on me being quiet in Vegas. I'm going to be a church mouse.
Well, I had budgeted for a cab ride back to the airport on Saturday because my exhaustive research on this crazy shuttle bus thing showed me that I couldn't do it on the weekend, so we'll just take a cab back. That'll be easy. But no, you wanted to see whether we could score a free ride from our listeners, which is great. Though I was kind of laughing because you were working that man hard. And everybody's like, dude, it's 4 a.m., man. I'm not getting up at 9:30. You know, the show was great. I love you guys. I had fun playing. But I ain't getting up at 9:30 to take you to the airport. But our good friend Kevin said, you know what? All right, you wore me down. I'll get up early. I'll take you there. And, of course, he shows up, it was a little unclear as to where he's picking us because I have, like, 7 entrances there. This poor guy was driving from 1 to 1 to 1. Meanwhile, we're inside arguing to get our poker rate honored on our thing. And poor Kevin's driving around like a wandering nomad. And but we finally all get paired up. And thank you very much, Kevin. We appreciate it. Got us to the airport in lickety-split time. As it turns out, it wasn't in time enough, though.
Yeah, we get there. And the funny thing is, too, is, you know, we got the one bag to check, like we always do, and we're walking through the line. There's, like, no line. It's like we're just going, weaving through those stupid little velvet rope things, although they're not velvet because it's Atlantic City, so they're, like, naugahyde. And we're weaving through, and Scott, I go to Scott, and I, like, sort of, like, casually say, be nice. Because, you know, the trip back, you know, is, we just want to get home, buddy. So he's like, no, you know, you of course, me arguing with the lady at Harrah's about our poker rate. You know, Scott was like, no worry, you got any argument for the day. I'm good to go now. We're going to make it. So we get to the window, and Scott says, yeah, here's our stuff. And then the lady's like, what flight's this? And you're like, you know, Tampa. You know, the 11:30 Tampa flight. Oh, that flight's gone. She said, we're like, what? What do you mean it's gone? That flight was 10:30, not 11:30, 10:20. I'm like, you're kidding, right? And it's only 5 of 10 at the time when we landed there. So I'm like, we still got plenty of time. It's like 20 minutes, 25 minutes away. No, they're all boarded and locked up. You missed your flight. I couldn't believe it. I've never missed a flight in my life.
I haven't either, and that's probably crazy. As much as I travel, I've never missed a flight. Mostly because I'm completely anal retentive about the schedule and everything, and always worried about it. And, wow, talk about my jaw hitting the ground. And the big problem was that I immediately realized that we're flying Spirit Airline into Atlantic City. It's not like they make this flight 20 times a day like Southwest does.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh boy, what's this going to mean? And immediately the lady's like, well, we can rebook you tomorrow. And I'm like, oh my gosh, tomorrow.
Oh man.
I lost all this money playing poker. And now I got to stay an extra night. It's Saturday too, so it's going to cost us like $4,000 in cab rides and hotels. And
the rebooking fee too, because they're not going to give it to you for the same like $9 fee we got
it
for.
At that point, we didn't know it either too. And then she's like, oh, or we can get you on the Orlando flight, which leaves at 12. I'm like, oh, I'm liking that idea. Of course, we had to figure out a way to get from Tampa.
Orlando to Tampa.
But we had to figure that out. One of our nice wives would have come and got us. But then she's like, there will be fees for either one. I'm like, oh, of course there is.
Yeah.
Isn't that? Of course there's going to be fees. And so it ended up costing us $538 on our flight that cost us like $17 each way. The book. To get to Orlando. And boy, I was just sick. So we ended up doing all the math. Figured we had to do Orlando. We go off. We get rebooked. And, oh, my gosh, Chris, an angel among angels. The Spirit ticket agent rebooks us, whispers to us, don't worry, I didn't charge it. And customer service comes full circle.
So now you it's restored your faith in Spirit Air, and I'm sure we'll take it again now, right? Because that first lady didn't blow it for you. The second lady.
I will be the nicest traveler traveling has ever seen for the rest of my life after that. I'll put up with any crazy non-explaining BS that anybody wants to give me anymore because of that nice, sweet lady in Atlantic City.
All right, well, now we should probably get into poker. I mean, we're about an hour into the show already, yeah, and we haven't really talked about any actual poker. So, you know, like Scott mentioned, that you know, we had to get over to I guess what, it's the marina side? Is that, what side is that called?
Yeah, we stayed, you know, if you haven't been to Atlantic City, you got the boardwalk, where most of the rooms are, and then you've got the marina side, where a couple rooms are, and,
we stayed at Harrah's, which is on the marina side.
Yeah, you can't walk, well, I guess you could walk, but it's a long walk.
Yeah, that's really long.
Between the two, so you gotta take the jitney or a cab or
the shuttle.
Or whatever you want to do to get between the two, so... So we started out on the marina side.
Yeah, and we figured, you know, we were going to meet up with the Caesars guys later on that night. So we said, you know, we'll check in, we'll put our bags down, we'll rest for a couple minutes, and then we'll walk over to the Borgata. Of course, it's kind of a far walk from Harrah's to the Borgata, even though they're both on the same side. So we took the jitney over and went to the Borgata. And the Borgata, you know, I actually had been there before, but, you know, it was nice. Very, 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 very big room. It's like the biggest room there. 87 tables, I think they said it was, Scott, right? 87?
Yeah, I believe so. 87.
Yeah, and they really set the standard. I mean, it's the busiest room. It's the biggest room. And we talked to the poker room manager and the poker room marketing guy and had a nice little conversation with them. They let us know, too, that the back area, which is where they have a lot of their tournaments, they're going to convert to a luxury high limit room. Two tables, I guess. Two tables. But they're going to convert that too, so they're moving along as well. With they're not stagnant; they continue to do different things there, and the place was hopping because it was the summer poker open as well. So they had pretty much every table was going.
You know, the interesting thing I thought was they have a tournament series every month there.
Yeah,
I don't know of any other poker room that does. Maybe some in the Vegas might, but you know, they have their four big ones during the year, including the WPT, but then in the off months, they do a tournament series those months, too.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So you're always going to find tournaments at Borgata. Very interesting. You can definitely see that why people still go to AC to play in that room.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, Harrah's had redone their property. They had done a redesign, and it was nice. I mean, I was really shocked at how nice it was. I had no idea it was going to look like that. Like, it had like a sort of a Vegas clubby feel to it, and they had this pool area that the poker room manager took us down, and he said, "You got to see this pool area," and it was really sweet. It was like a dome, you know, so that, you know.
Yeah, it was a dome, but I went down the next morning to check my internet because I couldn't get a service signal on floor 25.
Right.
And there were birds flying around my computer.
Well, there were birds in the casino, too, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that, but a couple of times while we were walking around, I saw birds flying by in the actual casino that got trapped. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that.
I'm like, oh, cute little birdie. I'm like, wait a minute. How'd you get in here?
How'd you get in here?
Of course, the bird wouldn't say anything. Wouldn't give it up.
But the interesting thing about the Caesars properties was they realized, with, you know, Philadelphia cropping up now and Delaware and, of course, the large rooms, the Taj and the Borgata right next door to every one of these rooms, that, you know, being four individual small rooms is probably not the best way to go. So they are combining together to really try to fight, you know, Goliath here. And what they're doing is they're combining, of course, people probably already know about the combined bad beat that they have up there. So they can make some big numbers to compete with, you know, the big bad beats of the Taj or the Borgata or whatever. But now they're combining their promotions and their schedules and stuff too, so that they don't step on each other's toes, right?
Yeah, it was in one sense it seems like a truly revolutionary idea. Like, hey, this is great. Let's all work together and make sure that we don't hurt each other. And the other side to me wonders why they never did it from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, if you got if we own four poker magazines, why would they not, you know, work together? But regardless, they're doing it now, and they could have just stopped at the bad beat, which, you know, stations, casinos do in Vegas and some other people. But they actually went a step further. They're doing some these free rolls, and then I really like the fact that they try to plan their tournament schedule. So, you know, it's not that the tournaments don't overlap, but if you're looking for a certain price point, you're going to go one place over the other that day, and you can actually go from property to property and play tournaments all day if you want.
Yeah, same thing with the cash games, too. Like, one property, Bally's, would offer a 1-1 no-limit cash game, but, you know, another room would offer a 1-3, and then another room would offer a 1-2, you know what I mean? So, or a 2, you know what I mean? So they try to keep their cash games separate, too. So if you have a specific game you want to play and staying at Harrah's and they don't have it, you can go to another, and they'll recommend you go there instead of it trying to be, no, we want to keep you in our room. If things are overflowing in one room or another, they'll recommend going to their other Caesar's property to try to, you know, combat the, I'll just scoot over to the Borgata or the Taj kind of mentality. So kudos for them for finally figuring it out and getting together. Now we'll see how successful it is, you know.
Yeah, one of the things that I really liked about the Harrah's room, what I thought was really unique, was they changed their wells.
Yeah, they're
for deep. The dealers, you know, instead of just a tray, it's a tray on half the side, and the other side is actually a deep well, you know, like almost like an ice cream, where you keep your ice cream treats.
Yeah, that's true.
And so the chips are vertical there rather than horizontal, and they can keep a lot more white chips and pink chips, which are 250s, there. So, it's much less likely that they're going to need to do constant refills, which is an annoyance for every player when you sit there, I need a fill, or you can't get, you know. Very different. I haven't seen that anywhere else.
And they kept the rake in the tray, which was kind of weird Did you notice?
I think that's I imagine that there's some kind of different way they had to do things in the league. I don't think we ever asked for sure. I know you kept asking me that, and I kept not asking.
Well, I think they said was that they put the jackpot in the. There was like the drop box was where the jackpot went, but the rake went actually into the thing. And you notice too, when the dealers came around, they never counted their trays. They just kept playing. Okay. Yeah. So that's why the rake went in there, because counting the tray would be useless. So it's a different way. Different way things are doing things there. And I liked it because it kept the action moving.
Of course, we mentioned balancing in one game. That's pretty different.
Yeah, because you don't see that very often. I think I've seen one of those in Vegas a couple of times, maybe. But
we've seen down here in Florida.
In
down here
in Florida, but
and I like the showboat. You could play and actually look out on the boardwalk.
Yeah, it was right at the back of the casino.
Which is kind of different. And then I got a little late to the discussion at Caesars that you were having with Keith there. But you mentioned they have like an 11-person table there, right?
Yeah, what they had was a tournament area that's on the outside, and they had some huge tables there. And he said, yeah, you can seat 11 at him. And really, I mean, it was the largest poker table I'd ever seen. It was massive. I feel sorry for the dealer or the guy from Foxwoods if he plays there, because he's got short arms. Because I tell you what, you can't collect the pot if you're sitting on the end. You're going to have it pushed to you. And the thing about it was he called it a stud table, which I was like, I don't think so, Keith. A stud table's smaller, right? So you can see all the cards and... It didn't make sense to me that would be a stud table, but he said it was, and it was massive, and you could see the 11 at him, so it was pretty cool. They got a little separate area there, so they're expanding, and pretty much all the AC Caesars properties were adding the Genesis Bravo, which they didn't have up to now, which kind of surprised me. I guess maybe, you know, it's a newer technology, and the Atlantic City rooms are older, so maybe that was why, but it was surprising that they didn't all have it, and they said by the end of the summer, they're all going to have the total Genesis hookup with data and everything, so that was pretty good too. They're improving, man. I don't think they're a dying breed like everyone says they are. I think they're gonna do okay up there.
Yeah, well, the thing about the Genesis Bravo too is not only is it an expensive unit to put in, but it's not just the unit, it's all the wiring. It takes a lot of wiring. You got to completely rewire your room.
Yeah,
so for a lot of times when you see it now, it's usually installed when they're building the room so they can do it all up front. It's really hard to go back and retrofit or more expensive. So I think that's why you're seeing in a lot of the newer rooms, like a lot of the Florida rooms that renovated during the limits, and then, you know, obviously these newer rooms in Pennsylvania and Delaware that just started up. So these older rooms, you know, it takes a little time to do, but it's good to see them.
And then, we went to the Taj. You got to go to the Taj. Every time... the whole weekend, I kept getting that song in the back of my head when Worm finally convinces Mike that we have to go to Atlantic City and play cards. And then they break into that song, and you see the big Atlantic City sign going over the car as they drive under there. And I kept hearing that song in the back of my head, and I kept saying, we got to get to the Taj. We got to get to the Taj. I want to see the Taj room. And then we get there, and oh, my God, it was so busy. And it's like 60-something tables, and they were packed, too. And it was early. It was before noon, and they were packed. Yeah. I mean, I guess... A lot of it has to do with, you know, they were the first real mega room in the area. And, you know, of course, Rounders, they paid homage to it. You know, on the back wall, there's this huge poster, movie poster of the Rounders. And then all photos of everybody on the set while they were doing the movie there and stuff like that. And some press release photos and things. So clearly they know where their bread is buttered and whatever. But I think the summer open at the Borgata was contributing to the massive action, too. But, man, it was really busy for that time of day. I mean, I guess it was a Friday, I guess, but still pretty busy.
Literally on a Friday. It wasn't a night when you have all the, the folks driving down from New York and stuff or Philadelphia. But they had a poker host there, and that's probably not totally unique. There's probably a lot of poker hosts that actually have a host to take care of customer service. But the first time I actually got to chat with one.
Yeah.
Real nice guy, Gerald. And one of the things that he mentioned is that they really are the home for stud in Atlantic City, because, you know, you hear this, if you don't travel there often, you hear, hey, stud is still popular in Atlantic City, and everybody's like, oh, no, it's like, you know, seeing Bigfoot. I trust you, Bigfoot is there, I've seen him. And you're like, yeah, right. But you get there, and they really did have a tremendous variety of stud in this room, very high-end games. Not that other rooms didn't have stud. I think I saw stud at three or four of the other rooms, but certainly not the variety that they had there at Taj. But they seem to be really proud of keeping stud alive at all levels there.
Yeah, it was very cool. And you know, the cool, one of the cool things too was walking into these rooms and seeing our magazine there. You know, I mean, it's just, it's, you know, you've gotten used to it in Florida because that's our home, you know, and that's where we started. But now when you walk in, you see somebody reading, like, you know, Antonio's column at the table.
Yeah.
It's just so cool. It's a really cool feeling that, you know, we're making a difference in a way. And that was kind of cool. But that was the first place, because we didn't really see very many rooms until that point, but that was the first place where I saw somebody reading our magazine. It just made me feel good.
Well, I absolutely love visiting the Tropicana.
Yeah.
Mostly because I knew it was the end of the boardwalk, and we survived that baton death march at 103 degrees in our pants. But we get in, the first thing I notice is there a waitlist display. Now, we just talked about how these rooms are installing Genesis Bravo, so you're kind of getting used to that kind of format on the big flat screens. At the Tropicana, obviously they haven't had either the resources or the time to install that, but I give them complete creativity points, Chris. For rigging up a system so they have a quasi-televised waitlist. And what they did is they had like a handwritten list, but they put like a flop camera over top of it, facing down on it, and then beamed that to one of their televisions. So it was like old school meets new school. I loved it.
It's like they're on the brink of something brilliant, but not so much. It was pretty funny, though. I looked up, and I what am I looking at? I'm thinking to myself, what is that thing? And then I realized it's a video feed of the wait list that's behind the brush stand. And I'm just like, that is hilarious. But it makes sense.
Creative.
Yeah, it's creative.
Very
makes sense. And, you know, they're using technology, just not the most advanced technology, you know?
Absolutely. That's pretty funny. They're doing what they can. I like it. But speaking of creativity, you're off talking to one of the system managers of floors about the room. I always like to check out the signage and stuff and try to soak up little things that maybe they forget to tell us. And so I was drawn to the sign that said the 38 Special promotion. Obviously I love 38 Special, but it had nothing to do with the band.
Right.
All right. But so I started reading about this, and wow, talk about a creative promotion here. All right. Here's the deal. You have to have an 8-3 in your hand. All right.
Yeah.
Now, granted, this is poker, not blackjack. So, you know, you generally don't want to play an 8-3. And then an 8-3 have to be on the board. All right. So you have to get at least two pair. Where's your 8-3?
Right.
But it's not done yet, Chris. And then you have to lose to quads in order to win this jackpot.
Oh, man.
Now, I'm not a math guy, and I know a lot of our listeners are, so somebody needs to put the math to this and let me know. I didn't ask. I was just floored, but I should have asked how often this thing hits and what the payout is. But I got to think the odds of this happening are pretty staggering. And the fact that if you actually win this promotion, they just give you the pink slip to the casino, right?
It's got to be harder than a bad beat. I mean, that's just incredible.
It was already tough to lose to quads. I mean, quad over quad or something like that. But, I mean, to have 8-3 and an 8-3 on the board and to lose to quads, that can't happen more than once or twice a year, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you're going to have to be playing 8-3 and probably for a raise, because somebody has a pocket pair to make the quads. They're probably raising with it on top.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, just all the scenarios, it's almost impossible. It's like saying you have to have a joker in your hand when there's no joker being dealt. I mean, it's not going to happen. Very interesting promotion.
And then, of course, folks that are regulars in Atlantic City might not know this, but the Golden Nugget has bought the Trump Marina. And was doing a lot of renovations to that. And come this fall, they will be adding a poker room there. So,
yeah.
And it was interesting to me because, you hear all this, the poker's off 40% or so there when, you know, with all the competition from Pennsylvania and Delaware. So I asked a couple of room managers. I was just curious. I mean, if you were a new casino coming in, would you open a poker room in that market already?
Yeah.
You know, facing those odds. And, some people made some good points, and in some of the press releases too. I mean, the Gold Nugget says, out in Vegas they're synonymous with poker. You know, they run their Grand Series and things like that. So it's impossible for them to think about having a casino that doesn't have a poker room. So hey, we'll give them credit, and we'll check back this fall when it opens up to see how it turns out.
You know, I made a huge mistake today, and I didn't eat before the show, and so my stomach is growling right now, and it reminds me of how hungry we were that first day on Friday. You know, we thought, all right, we'll go to some casino, maybe score a comp, you know, and we'll eat right away. And not so much. You know, we actually did score the comp. Yeah. But the comp wasn't good on Fridays, and it wasn't good until 4 p.m. We thought it was going to be good right away. So we're starving. Basically, nothing is open for food in casinos until 4 o'clock on that day for some reason. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah,
but
what is with the city? You know, I'm like, oh, you know, I know some buffets don't open for breakfast, you know, cost, things like that. But I haven't been to a buffet anywhere in my life that doesn't open for lunch. So, we tried to go to the one buffet. Oh, yeah, that's open at 4. Really? Okay, that's kind of weird. All right, we'll just go next door. So we walked next door.
Nothing.
Darkness.
Not even a soul. The place is completely closed down and dark.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Are we not going to be able to seriously eat till 4? Yeah, at this point, our hunger had passed that point where you could just nibble a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think we actually said it to each other, but I know we were telepathically saying, I need a buffet. I need to destroy some food. That's how hungry I am. So we kept walking, and we ended up at a truly terrible buffet.
Yes.
The only good thing is that we could all-you-can-eat shrimp, and I tried to get my $20 worth of shrimp out of that thing. And then, of course, we walked 4 more feet to the boardwalk actual area where all these great little fast food and boardwalk stands are, and we could have gorged like kings for less than $20 there.
I know. They had like 99-cent hot dogs that we could have had 20 hot dogs each. I mean, it could have been a whole Nathan's, you know, contest all over again. And but, you know, hey, you live and you learn. And, you know, next time I'll just say to the guy, hey, wait a minute, this comp, are you sure it's going to be good? Because I want to use it, you know. Oh, man, but I was starving. So we're on the boardwalk, and, you know, Scott says to me before the, you know, trip, hey, make sure you pack pants. And so when you know, if you're going to wear pants and you're going to go out to dinner, you're going to wear nice shoes. So I have these nice leather boat shoes that normally I wear without socks, but I wore socks for the meeting because I didn't want anybody freaking out, you know. So I looked okay. But the next day, I was like, you know, I'm just gonna wear my boat shoes like I normally do. And a big mistake because I didn't have socks, and it's 103 degrees. So, like, by the time we got to the first or second casino on the boardwalk, I already had blisters forming on my feet. And I'm like, we got to spend the whole day out here and walk another 6 miles all the way down to the Trop and then back. I'm going to have to do something. So we walk by this 99-cent store. And I'm like, hey, I didn't know it was a 99-cent store. I just thought it was a cheap store, you know. So I'm like, you guys got sandals? And they're like, yeah, around the corner. I said, oh, cool. So I looked around and Of course, the largest size they had was large. It wasn't extra large. So I'm hoping to God that they fit. And I go up to the lady, and how much are these? She goes, she looks at me like I'm an idiot. I'm like, what? How much are they? She's 99 cents. I'm like, yeah, okay. I can afford that. Here you go. Here's a dollar. And then I bought a couple sodas. And then I go outside, and I see the sign. Everything for 99 cents is the name of the store. And to say these, you know, slippers/thongs/sandals, whatever they were less than masculine, would be the understatement of the young century.
I don't know. I thought you looked pretty hip in them.
And of course, they didn't fit. So I avoided the blisters that I already had, but created all new set of new ones with these things that I wore for. It was brutal. I tried walking on the boardwalk without shoes. That didn't work. It was too hot. I tried walking on my regular shoes. The blisters were killing me. I tried walking in the sandals. New blisters were killing me. I was miserable, man. It sucked.
Well, you know, despite it being 103 degrees, famished, hot, blisters, we did not fight with each other.
No.
I can't say the same for a couple people at Caesars. We were sitting down interviewing Keith, one of the assistant managers there, and all of a sudden, screaming from a table over there, and so we paused to try to figure out what's going on. I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. Two people were fighting over seat 10. You know, the new game was opening, and one guy said he had locked it up, another woman said that she locked it up, and it was vicious screaming, and I'm like, seat 10? Seat 10, right next to the dealer where your knee gets bloodied, knocking into the tip jars or the rake boxes or whatever thing they got dangling there. I would pay $100 almost every time I sit down at the table to not sit in seat 10. And these two people are ready to get bloody like it's over a jar of urine to sit there.
I got a feeling it was a dirty old man wanting to sit next to the dealer in Fort Ritter, and then the girl was friends with the dealer and wanted to sit next to him. I don't know. I mean, why they were so intent on having to have that seat. And it was so bad that she left, right? I watched her leave. She took her chips and left. She didn't play. So that's crazy to me.
Absolutely crazy. You're right. Maybe that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, I guess you could see the cards a little bit better. I don't know. Seat 1 or seat 10, if you see me sitting in those, you will take all my stack because I'll be so irritated and untilted that I won't be able to adjust. And these people are fighting to get into it.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. Absolutely.
We didn't get in a fight, and we also didn't get cancer on this, Chris.
Well, we don't know that we didn't, but we're assuming we didn't.
Yes. I'm totally digging this new almost no smoking policy in New Jersey. You know, I remember kind of on the peripheral hearing about this, and I know they had a fight because you always have a fight everywhere you go when you change the no smoking. But I totally forgot about it, and I was walking through the casino like the second day, and I'm like, wow, it's amazing. It must be early. I just don't smell the smoke like I normally do. And then that's when I remembered and I saw some of the signs that you can't smoke in a lot of places. Now, some of the casinos still had little small areas where you could smoke, so I'm sure there's some kind of like, concession they made to the casinos with the hardcore already one foot in the grave people continue smoking. But I loved it. And I'm not judging our listeners who smoke. You know, you're more than welcome to smoke. I just, as somebody that doesn't smoke, the biggest problem I have when I go on these trips is, I get back to the hotel room at night and my clothes just smell like cigarette smoke, and I didn't smoke, so I just don't think that's fair to me.
Yeah, no, it's great, and when I was younger, I had a slight case of asthma as a kid, so whenever I would walk into the bowling alleys when I used to be a bowler when I was younger, it would kill me, and I have to get acclimated to it, and it just drove me nuts and just makes you miserable, and that's one of the things that I hated about becoming a poker player was the casino smoke, and now that they've done it, it was a nice trip. It was much more enjoyable not walking in and having to fight your way through to the poker room, which would be non-smoking. So it was very good. Right. Yeah. I enjoyed it. But we did play. Not to I know we're an hour and 10 minutes in the show, and we still haven't really talked about playing, but we did have a chance to play. The poker room manager at Harrah's was very proud of his pink chip game. Mm-hmm. And Scott alluded to earlier, the pink chip was $2.50. And they had a $7.50, $15 Omaha 8 stud 8 mix game that Scott was just absolutely drooling over.
Gorgeous game.
Yeah. And I said, yeah, you know what? Not so much for me. I mean, I love mixed games, but I'm not going to play that level with 08 in mix. You know, I'll play stud 8. I'll play stud 8, 5, 10, 10, 20, I think. But I won't play it with Omaha 8 so often in the mix. And a horse is one thing. I'd play a 5-10 horse game and play it for a round or whatever, but correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, they did it per down, right? So you'd be playing Omaha for the whole down.
That's an hour each, generally speaking.
I'm just not comfortable playing 750, 15 Omaha 8 with, and you sat down with some tough company, man. I know you probably thought it was going to be soft, but that was a tough game you played in.
No, I certainly didn't think it was going to be soft. I was just excited to be able to play the game. And I was even telling people as I was losing, and I lost. I just can't quit it because I wish I could get anything close to that here in Florida.
Yeah.
And I just can't. I mean, the best I could do is a 4-8 Omaha game that I have to drive a ways for. I mean, I'm never going to get stud 8 down here, not even a tournament for him. So to get that kind of game where it switches back and forth, I was happy to lose some money and lost some money I did. In fact, this is the telling thing about my play on this trip. My only winning session of the trip was in blackjack.
And it was a good session, though.
After the meetup, El Snarfo and Bernice Q and I went over to blackjack pit and played for another, hour or so, and ended up winning a lot there, which is good. Didn't get unstuck by lonesome, but that's always, that's never a good sign when your only winning session at a poker room is at blackjack.
I unfortunately had to play No Limit Hold'em, and I was fortunate that I won and was up for the trip too, but I had one hand that really I won a huge pot on it, and that was really it for the whole trip. I mean, I had a couple of small pots, and I'm always aware of how little I play when I go on these trips, because when I finally do play, there's always a hand that I misplay, and I just had that a big hand where I had aces versus jacks and felted a guy and won a really big pot, so a couple of hands later, I got pocket queens, and a new woman had joined the table, and she raised another gun, and I had pocket queens, and I knew the guys behind me were really loose, because one of the guys I felted was unbelievably loose, and that was how I felt him. So I really thought that I might get away with just calling her and then having these guys re-raise so I can come over the top with my queens. And it was a huge mistake. I got like four callers. Flop came all unders, and I just called her bet, thinking that she didn't really have a hand. And the turn was a king, so now I had an open-ended draw on top of it, and she bet and I called. And on the river was a blank, but I still had queens. She bet and I called, and she turns over king nine. And I thought, he raised under the gun with king nine, didn't have anything on the flop, and I totally misplayed it. I should have re-raised pre-flop or whatever. And it just goes to show you that I just don't play enough anymore with the internet being gone and you know, with us being so busy with the magazine and not making as many trips as we used to, that, you know, it's glaring to me, and I'm not comfortable, you know, playing Nolan and Hold'em anymore. So I was hoping for a stud game that I could get into, not a $15 one, but that just didn't happen. So I mean, I was up for the trip and I was happy and I'm not complaining, but you know, whoever thought that I'd be sitting there complaining that I had to play Nolan and Hold'em, you know? Jeez.
Well, there was no complaining at our meetup.
No, it went well.
I didn't think. We ended up having 11 people show up. A couple late cancellations from people that we were hoping to see again. But we'll catch you next time we're up there. But we had a lot of little Apes tie-ins, I thought, Chris.
Oh, yeah. One of our first banana winners of the season before everything got canceled was by Rich from the Bronx, and he brought his banana with him.
That was awesome.
That was great, and we had a lot of fun with that too. Because later on, we had some guy who actually saw the tournament mentioned, or the meetup mentioned in the magazine. He actually played with us, and he was diabetic, and he needed to take a break and eat. And so later on, Rich and this guy didn't come back. And so we're like, what happened? And so I said, well, I think maybe the guy in the 10 seat tried to eat the plastic banana, and now they're both in the emergency room or something. So we're all laughing about it. But yeah, it was great. He actually brought the banana that we sent him for winning the Apes event earlier in the year. That was cool.
And we could have scripted this. We had a Russian interloper.
Yeah, I don't know if he was Russian, though.
We're going to pretend he was Russian. Eastern European, right?
Yeah, he was Eastern European. And he was a pretty good player. And I got into a big hand with him. And he ended up laying down he had a pack of pocket tens, and I had flopped a king, and it was the last hand of the break, and I really wanted him to call. He came, and he had seen the meetup in the magazine, which, you know, he's not an interloper, he just, you know.
No, I know. It's more fun to say it on the show.
And El Snarfo was there, and we got into a big hand, too. I seemed like I got in a big hand with everybody.
Yeah.
Even you. Yeah, Snarfo got into a big hand with me and lost almost all his chips to me and then was out first in the tournament, so felt bad about that for him. But he rallied later. We played cash games with him, too. And you went out second, buddy.
Yeah, I went to show a little solidarity to my friend El Snarfo because I hadn't seen him in a while. So I made a point to go out second, overplayed tens. And, you know, it seems like in every Apes event, Godar is right next to me at the table, and he was right next to me in this. And talk about it crazy. I mean, the blinds were starting to get up. We had a good chip stack and structure, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. It was a good
structure. Particularly because it was 11 players sit and go, what it turned out to be. But blinds were starting to get up a little bit, and I had lost a couple hands, including one to you. And so I got a pocket tens. Bernice made a pre-flop raise. I called from small blind. I was hoping to either flop a 10 or get all low cards. It was all low cards. So I checked to her. She made a big bet. I'm like, ooh, shoved. Got the, are you serious from her? I'm like, yes, all right. I think I got this one. Godard is already rushing his chips into the pot.
Oh, man.
And she eventually folds, and he had flopped a straight. The crazy thing is, because I had a 10, he had one of 10 in his hand, that I still had an out to chop, and I couldn't get it. Boom, gone.
He knocked me out, too. So he apparently likes to knock out any of hosts.
Double bounty.
Yeah, I had like a massive chip lead early on. I got hit in the head with the deck, and I made some good moves too that people don't know about, and that was kind of cool. Massive chip lead, and I'm like, all right, well, I can probably coast to the top three and make some money here. And sure enough, I started making a lot of second best hands. And in the end, I had jack nine suited. I had eight big blinds. I shoved, gets all the way around, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna make it. And Godar looks down at one queen, and he looks down at another queen, and so he calls. Flop comes I had Jack 9, he had Queens. Flop comes Jack 9, Queen. And I'm like, oh! I'm essentially drawing dead, but it was three spades, and the turn was a spade, so I actually had all the spades in the deck to save and chop, and of course, it didn't happen, and he knocked me out, too. I went out like fifth, and they paid three spots, so that kind of sucked, and then that's when I went and joined you guys, so it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, and joining us, our loser's lounge for this trip was the 4-8 mini-blind limit game. And a mini-blind means that it's one, two blinds, and you only have to call a two to get in if you want to raise it six. You know, sometimes they do these one, two blinds, and you have to still come in, call four, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens. But Snarfoot was there. I sat down, too. And one by one, as folks did the shameful shuffle over from the tournament area, they sat down. To the point that by the time the game broke so we could do our own little hose game, there were only two non-anti-uppers at the table.
Yeah.
So it turned out to be a lot of fun, but poor Bernice, you know, she was third out of the tournament, I think, and came over and sat down. And this poor woman was having a wretched day to begin with. She just bought a car. She lives in Brooklyn. It took her 5.5 hours to get from Brooklyn to Atlantic City. No AC in the car. And she was already out. So we got her into the tournament late, and then she ended up losing that. So we cost her $70 by trying to be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, can you imagine being on the tunnel for, or she was on the tunnel of the Verrazano Bridge. I can't remember what she said, but for 2 hours, just sitting there.
Forever.
And that's just horrid. And then she gets there. She gets there late. She's disappointed she can't play in the tournament, so we get her in. And then she goes to the cash game tables, and it was just as bad for her there, too, I think.
Yeah, she sits down. Of course, she's just steaming over the hand she played with you. And then we got this drunk guy at the table. That he's the worst combination of drunk. He's playing badly. He's hitting, so he's winning. And he's just talking and talking. And I thought she was gonna have a little throwdown with this guy. She kept acting out of turn, and she was getting upset, as she should have. And he's like, well, what do you want me to do? And she said, well, I want you to wait for me to act.
Yeah.
So I thought she was going to take him, and she could have, you know, and Snurfo was ready to back her up. I would have, too, but, you know, I wouldn't be much helping her in a fight at all. I mean, I'd be the guy to be able to call 911 or something, or, you know, wave down something. But, you know, I would have defended our folks if I had to.
And, you know, just to clarify, too, it wasn't a hand that she was in with me that she was mad about. She got into a hand all in with another guy, and it was actually Godard, I think. And Godard made a move on her, thinking that because he was on the button and she was in a small blind, she'd have to fold. But she shoved, and he was pot committed. And he called and turns over 7-3, and she's got, like, a pocket pair. And he had a pair, but she hit – no, she had, like, ace-king or something like that. And whatever it was, she hit a pair. And he hit a pair, but her pair was bigger. So when it gets to the river, I lean over, and I'm like, yeah, all I got to do is avoid a 7 and a 3. And a 3 pops up, and she turns around like, you know, like Linda Blair in The Exorcist. Her head just like kind of rotated on a spigot. And she turns to me, and she's like, dude, that's the one pet peeve I have. I'm so mad at you. Don't ever call the cards out that I need to beat me. And I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry. And then she, like, stormed off and joined you. And so she was already mad by the time she got over there. And, oh, by the way, too, Joe won our tournament.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a listener named Joe who he's kind of a new listener, but he's a regular up in the Philly area. And he showed up and was on my left. And good guy, real good player. You know, actually sucked out on me for a big pot, which has ended up causing my demise ultimately. So... not too happy about that. But he won the tournament. Godard finished second. Forgot to say that, too. And congrats to those guys. Nice job. And Kevin, who gave us the ride, finished third. So they gave him his money back. It was a, you know, because they only paid two spots for the 11-table tournament. So they agreed to give him his money back. So that was cool. So that worked out well. And
One of our listeners, we are calling Montreal Dave now.
Yeah, Montreal Dave. And
that great hand from the Montreal with the D's and the J, or whatever the
letters were.
And he got there late, missed the tournament, but he came over and played some of the losers on his table with us, even though he wasn't a loser. And then joined us over at the private game. We finally got the private game going. I don't know what time it was that we started it.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of fun. We played hose there, and we played until 4 in the morning.
Yep.
But it was hose, not horse. I mean, talk about a dagger in the stomach. of the Antioch Nation. Couldn't play Raz. In my notes I put because that's bad in AC, but I later heard that it's approved now in AC. They just haven't started playing it in Heritage yet.
All right.
But I don't know what kind of approval you would need. It's not Florida where you got a bunch of idiots down here running it. I mean, Raz was the sub capital of the world. They don't play Raz there?
I know, that's so weird. You know, we were there for so long, too. I was starving, but I'm on this diet thing, you know, so I won't eat after 10 o'clock at night, but not Scott. Scott will eat no matter what time it is.
I was hoping I was going to make it, but poor Bernice hadn't eaten all day, too, so I could tell she was hungry, and that made me start thinking about food. And, you know, so we ordered there, and I got the $11 grilled cheese sandwich. Most I've ever paid for a grilled cheese sandwich.
$11 for
But it was good. It came with fries, too. And I got to pick my cheese and my bread. You know, I don't know if I order a grilled cheese. Maybe this happens everywhere. But I was ecstatic. I thought that was cool. But just a little note, rye, provolone, not a good mix. Learn from my mistakes, kids.
Man, $11 grilled cheese. That's just incredible.
And I had a blast playing with Dan. You know, we started at the tournament, and he bought me a nice big beer, which was great. And so we hit it off to begin with. We got in a massive Omaha hand, and we both turned over Ace King Jack 7. Never seen that before. The two of us with the exact same hand, and I shouldn't say exact same hand because he had draws.
Yeah.
It didn't get there, but we ended up chopping it. But it was hilarious that we had the same four cards. And then, of course, the biggest laugh of the night came from Dan. You know, we were sitting there, and we gave everybody that came a patch, you know, a patch to wear. A couple of them wore it. He was one of them. So this woman walks up to him, right, and says, "Hey, are you from Annie Up?" And he's like, "Yes, I am." And she's like, "Wow, I was just in your issue last week. They did a profile on me. I loved it. I wish I would have known about you guys doing a tournament or cash game. I would have came and played." And that was the beginning of what I call an excellently crafted day at the theater. He kept this going for like 5 minutes. And it was beautiful. He's like, "Well, hey, you know, we got another meetup coming up in Vegas on July 1st. "Oh, really? I don't think I can make that." He's like, "Oh, that's great." Just like he owned the company.
That's okay. We'll have more meetups. Just check any Up magazine for your every month and see what we're doing next. And then he says, "Have you met Scott yet?" And she turns and says, "Oh, hi."
I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I didn't want her to get the wrong impression here, as funny as this was." So I'm like, "Hi, I'm Scott." And I shook her hand, and she looked at me like, "Yeah, okay, great." And went back to talking to him like I didn't exist.
Oh man, that was hilarious. So I'm sitting at the end of the table like, "Hello." Remember being out here, you know? But it was pretty funny.
Well, we talk about our ambassador program, and I think we got to hire Dan as our fake ambassador.
Yes. Wherever he's playing, he's got to fake represent.
Oh, man, that was great. I had a great time, though, and, you know, assuming that I cannot misread my flight times, I think we're going to make it out to Atlantic City a couple times because it's so cheap on Spirit, and now that I love them so much. We'll try to do it. So we'll try to get folks together again sometime, but certainly had a blast this time.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Annie Up.
J-Ram is back, Chris.
Yes, he is. He's a good supplier of content for us. We appreciate it.
He keeps us in business. We appreciate that. hanging on that one piece of swag. I don't know what swag we sent him, but it might be getting time for us to send him another piece of swag. But he's providing our hand of the week this week from a 1-2 no limit hold'em cash game at Hollywood Casino just out Cincinnati.
Right.
You can get your Annie Up copies there now.
Yep, you can.
We've got our great ambassador, Don Lawson, there letting us know what's going on in the world of Indiana Kentucky poker. So J. Ram was playing this. I remember it's a 1-2 game. He sat down with 200, he says. He's been at it about an hour and a half, not getting much luck, picking up a couple small pots pre-flop. Thinks his image is fairly solid, despite being whittled down to about 160 because I haven't really hit flops hard.
Okay.
That's not bad. If you haven't won a pot and you're only down 40 an hour and a half in.
At least he's down and not worked his stack up too, because that's... I'm getting tired of that.
Yeah. All right, so it's an 8-handed table. And he looks down at 9 of hearts, 10 of hearts, and the hijack with one limper ahead of him.
Favorite hand. That's my favorite hand.
It's certainly Godard's favorite hand.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're in position, and you have suited connectors, and you want to... you always want to be in position with those. And if you want to try to build a pot, maybe do a little min-raise or something here. But I don't have a problem with calling or raising here. So I'd probably raise it to about 10 or 12.
Yeah, this is really where you're getting the temperature of the table. I mean, we don't know much from here. But you're right. I could go either way. I could just limp and try to, you know, if it's a passive table and try to get a couple other limpers in there and hope to hit big. If it's an action table, then I'm fine raising because I'm in the hijack. So if I can steal the button here and be in position and hit my hand, and it's kind of disguised. So
yeah.
So I guess we're really telling on the temperature of the table here. So
yeah.
All right, well, he decides to bump it to $11. He says the standard has been between 8 and 12, so he's right in the middle of what the standard raise is.
Okay.
Action folds to the big blind who calls. Gets a fold from the early flipper.
Flipper.
I like that word. Fold from the early limper.
All right, so how many people were in the pot now? Three?
Heads up with the big blind.
Oh, heads up. Oh, okay. All right, so we're heads up. And
he says our villain here hasn't really been out of line from what he can tell, so he pegged him as a standard, fairly solid player at this point.
Okay.
And that player has $125 after his call, so we have him covered.
All right, so the pot's about 25-ish, 24?
25 is what the notes here say.
Okay. That's and cool.
The flop is the deuce of hearts, tray of clubs, five of hearts.
That's a pretty good flop for us. I mean, we showed aggression. We have a flush draw, two overs. I like that. I like that flop. It's not ideal, but I like it. And so let's see what happens.
Yeah, well, we're playing this hand. You know, you're playing mostly for the straight, if not the straight, maybe some hearts. So you got the hearts. It's tough to really put our opponent on anything here that really hit, other than maybe a set. But you're always worried about sets.
Right.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of like this flop.
Yeah, I kind of like it too.
All right, but the big blind leads out for 15. Do we still like it?
I think so. I mean, no matter what he has, you have outs. And, you know, if he has a wheel or if he has a set or a smaller overpair, I mean, you still have outs. So it makes no difference to me that he bet 15. I don't know what I would do here, though, right now. I have to think about it. I probably would just call because I don't want to get shut out of this pot. You know, yeah. I mean, if I don't believe him, if I thought he was a loose, crazy guy, I might consider raising just to take it down. But he did say he was fairly solid, so in standard. So I'm just going to have to call and assess the turn. I don't feel like I want to make this pot too big right now.
Well, I always think it's interesting when you you raise pre-flop and then somebody out of position bets into you on the flop.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they're trying to let you know that I hit this and I don't want you to stick around. Sometimes they want to control the pot size. You just never know.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
but I'm
call.
Happy just calling here.
Yeah, me
and,
too.
Hoping to hit my hearts and or a card on the turn that lets me feel a little more confident about playing back at him.
I like it. I like the just a call because and you know what too, your cards, your overs could be good too if you hit them. So let's just call and see what happens.
All right, that's the way we do. Pot is $55. The turn is the nine of diamonds. So our board now is deuce of hearts, tray of clubs, five of hearts, nine of diamonds. Now we have a top pair to go with our flush draw.
Okay.
And the big blind bets $25 into us.
All right. Well, I think I like another call. I mean, if we've hit top pair, maybe we could raise here. But again, if somebody comes back over the top, what do we do? You know, I like controlling the pot size here and calling. And again, if we're still behind to a set or something, we still have outs to the flush. So, and, you know, or if they had straight, if they had ace four or somehow 4-6, which I doubt. I still like a call here. I don't think a raise accomplishes much here. We have the best hand. If we think we have the best hand, you know, we're not going to get shut out of this. So I like a call again. 25 is reasonable.
Well, again, it's a 1-2 game, so it's tough to like really get too strategic on what people are saying. But I think it's interesting the big blind bets out 25 here, which is a little less than pot. You know, if he had a straight or something that he was felt vulnerable to hearts with, I think on his flop bet was fine, but I think his turn bet, he's going to ratchet it up a little bit more, I would think. I would expect a bet like 40 or 50 from him.
Yeah. Yeah, less than half the pot. But you know, again, I don't know if that means strength. Then you know, I don't really think that we're far behind, and we still have outs. It's starting to feel like a hand, like pocket sixes or something like that, where he felt he was safe and the nine couldn't have helped. So, but that he's not making a strong enough bet on the turn because he's just not certain where he is in the hand. Because if he knew that, you know, nine couldn't have hit us, or if he knew that we were drawing, he would have bet more. So it is interesting. He could be just couching his bets too. He could have a draw that's not, you know, and he's just betting it to try to take it down and then hoping it hits. So I don't know. I don't like raising here though. I'm probably wrong.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, after his flop and turn bet, which was $40, he's down to 85. I'm not necessarily thinking that I like a raise here, but I mean, this is a chance where he can go all in, and he has to consider whether he wants to call off all of his chips. And if he does call, we still think we have the outs, particularly with a nine now. I feel a little emboldened by it.
Yeah, well,
if he had a bigger stack, it'd be a different story, but I think we can put a little pressure on him here. And if we're wrong, then we have the outs.
Yeah. I just don't like, to me, that's a coin flip theory there, you know, because you're right or you're wrong, and it's not, you know, there's no black or, it's just right or wrong. And to me, I don't want to put all my money in not knowing what my outs are. Like, in other words, yeah, I have the flush outs, but this guy could have ace four of hearts, and we're drawing dead. You know, he's already got a wheel, and we're drawing dead. So I don't know. I just don't like the put all my money in here, put him to a decision. If he has a wheel, then we have to hit the flush. And if he has a set, we have to hit the flush. That doesn't pair the board. So I don't know. I don't know if I like putting him to a decision here, because he's only got $80 left, and I don't think maybe he can't. Maybe he's the type of player that thinks he can't fold there, and we couldn't get a better hand to lay down. So
he's only got 50 invested in here. So you know, if he's got two pair, it might be a hand you push him off of.
Yeah, but the amount he has invested doesn't reflect what's in the pot and how much, you know, it is to call and the odds he's getting with his hand that he's already made. We don't know what he has, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, if he has a single pair or something, you know, there's lots of hands here. I think that he might fold and save his $85 with.
Yeah.
At a 1-2 game, you know, yeah. At a higher game where people are a little more sophisticated, and all we know about him right now is our assumption that he's a standard, fairly solid player at this point.
If he was none much
of those players, you can don't like to be put to a test.
If he was much deeper, I think I would have considered raising, but I just feel like I'm in a situation where he may be one of those types that can't fold, and he does have like pocket sixes. You know, I don't know. I don't like a race here. I just want to call.
All right. Well, that's what our hero does. So the pot is 105 going to the river, which is the deuce of clubs. So our final board is deuce of hearts, tray of clubs, five of hearts, nine of diamonds, deuce of clubs. So we missed our flush board pairs, and the big blind bets $45 into us, leaving 40 behind.
Okay. Well, there's just two things that you're either going to call or fold, so you're not going to raise. I like a call here. I feel like this guy has like sixes or sevens, you know? I mean, if he had a bigger pair than nines, you know, put in the pocket, I think he would have raised again earlier because he was out of position. He would have wanted to take this hand down earlier. So, I mean, maybe he has a set that now filled up, but I just don't get that feeling. I felt like if he had a set, he would have bet a lot more on the turn because, you know, if the way we played it like a draw. And if he has a set, he doesn't want you hitting your flush draw or your straight draw. So it feels a lot like sixes or sevens or something like that, maybe even eights. I don't know. I can't put him on a bigger pair than nines. And I mean, maybe he has ace four for a wheel, but even then, you think he'd want to protect it on the turn a little better, and bet a little more, like you said earlier, bet more than 25. So, I don't know. I have to call here and see what he has. I'm dying to know.
All right. Well, our hero tanks for a minute, still bummed that he missed the draw, but trying to consider his options. He says it came down to that I felt like I was behind a lot of hands. I just didn't like the consistent firing out he did. I wish we could have checked it down. But alas, I folded to the relatively small bet.
Hmm.
He said, I figured a push steal was no good since he only had 40 left and would probably feel committed.
Right.
Although I still argue that it might have worked on the turn, but we'll see. So he folded. So he's got a couple questions that he's pondered since. I don't think we actually find out what our villain had here.
Ugh.
He wants to know whether he had showdown value there with top pair.
I thought so. I mean, like I said, the hands that the hands that beat us don't seem like they would have played that way, I don't think. I mean, maybe a wheel, and maybe he's not afraid of the flush, but that turn bet to me is very telling. So, I don't know. A set that boats up, yeah, maybe he does bet 40, 45 on the end with a boat, but on the turn, the set seems very vulnerable to me, and you know, you could have any ace in your hand. You raise preflop, so you're really all you're looking for is a four for a wheel now. So you would think he'd want to protect against that, plus the hearts, and he didn't. So I just don't put him on a hand that beats us, really. And if he did, I want to know what it is. I think the nines are a good hand there, and I think he was good. I think he laid down a winner.
Then he says the possible holdings he had considered for him were jacks, tens, 6-6, 5-5, 4-4, 3-3. Deuce deuce, which is unlikely, he thinks. Ace four suited, which is unlikely, he thinks. In the flip lines, because he can't see them betting out after flopping the straight. Ruled out queen queen and better, thinking he would have repot me preflop. And he doubts that he was drawing the hearts as well, but I guess he could be somebody bluffing with the ace of hearts and another random heart. But then he wonders why I bet the river in that way. Why not push with his busted draw to improve the chances of inducing my fold? Or was he just scared to go busto?
Yeah, I don't think this guy was bluffing. I don't think that's a brilliant $45 bet on the end bluff if he knew exactly how you would play and that you were drawing and would miss. But
yeah, you're right. That's a terrible bet to bluff with.
Yeah, if he's standard and he's solid, you know, I don't think that's what he's doing there on the end. So I would rule out the bluffing. But, you know, the jacks and the tens, I would rule those out, too. I feel like jacks would re-raise there preflop, and maybe even tens. You know, the sixes are right up his alley. The fives and the fours, maybe he's playing it that way because he's open-ended and he's, you know, it's a good flop for fours. But when the nine comes, I don't know if he keeps continuing the bet like that. Maybe he checks the turn. I don't know. I just feel like most of those hands you beat or would have known from him or heard from him a lot earlier than you did. So I really am attached to the sixes through eights hand here and a possible suited ace, but I don't know. I don't feel like the guy's bluffing on the river, that's for sure.
And then finally he asked, what could he have done differently? He's concluded that the above range is pretty big and I really need to re-raise at some point to define his hand better. I think the spot I missed was the turn, especially because he made it cheap for me to raise 2 to 3 times his bet and still get away from it if he pushed with, say, a set flop straight over a pair. If he calls there, maybe checks to me on the river, and I can check behind to get the showdown.
Yeah, I think you even mentioned it, too. So I think that, yeah, the place to play it differently would be the turn, you know, because I don't think raising on the flop, if this guy had the strong enough hand to bet into a preflop raiser on that flop, then I don't think he's going anywhere that early in the hand. Maybe you make a re-raise there, but you have no hand to speak of other than a fourth best flush draw, you know, and yeah. Do you really want to commit all your chips, or, you know, why not just take the free card or the cheap card, I mean, for the turn and make your hand rather than commit yourself to a hand that you have to get away from now because you happen to make a re-raise or a raise on the flop. So I don't know. I think the turn is the only spot where you could have played it differently, but I don't disagree with the way you played it. Scott does. So there is a different way to play it, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely I think what we've seen there is the power of that bet into a raiser from the blinds on the flop.
Yeah.
Because it just confuses you.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you say, hey, either I'm you know, I'm going to be aggressive and I'm going to raise. I don't care. I'm going to be macho. And then you get in trouble if you get 3-bet if you don't have a hand.
Right.
Or you get confused and you call, which is what we do, and then you don't know where you are. So at that point, if that's the situation, I think you got to figure out something on the turn.
Yeah, I agree. And, well, it's a pretty standard hand, but it gets more interesting what that turn pairs you. Because you're always saying, you know, I could always hit the cards that are in my hand when you have the draw. But very rarely do we hit that card and then think, okay, now what do I do? I could be ahead or behind. So a major twist there on the turn.
And then finally, he wants to know whether his actions let him let his opponent know pretty much what he had.
Probably, although I'm sure the guy that he was up against didn't think he had a nine in his hand. You know, I'm he probably thought he was drawing, or it could have been that he had ace king and that he had two overs and a wheel draw, and that's why you were sticking around with maybe the ace of hearts, which is why you called the flop bet. You know, I don't know. Maybe he thought you had ace nine or something. I don't know. But I don't think he thought you had a nine in your hand. I think he thought you were drawing or had a you know, a smaller hand or something. And yeah, probably led him to believe that you had a draw hand. You know, I would just calling always indicates a draw usually.
Yeah, my guess is he probably either put his on the draw or something like an ace queen or ace king or, you know, two overs, and we just didn't believe him.
Yeah.
And we're just hoping to, you know, playing it, calling passively, hoping to hit one of those things so we can feel a little more confident about our hand. So
the other thing, too, is that if the guy has a wheel or a set, then he's hoping you have the over pair, and he doesn't really. Yeah. So it's hard to answer that question because you don't know what the guy ends up having, you know. But I don't think you could have played it much differently than you did.
All right, well, Jerem, we always appreciate when you keep us afloat here, and obviously you added swag already, but we'll look to get, maybe we'll have to find something here for you soon. But a reminder, everybody else, send your hands of the week, your letters, your comments, your criticisms to podcast@andyupmagazine.com, and you too might win something great like a deck of J-Zine playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up, now available in that awesome store, the Ante Up store at antyupstore.com.
Looking forward to hitting Vegas in a couple of weeks, and glad to be back from AC. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.